everybody, and welcome to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, the title will explain everything for you. This is a podcast in which I shall discuss about animation, believe it or not, but specifically the latest news that happened this week. So for today's episode, we are going to start things off looking into Ghostbusters and how it's pretty much doing at the box office, and we will be discussing about the future of if there's even going to be a franchise or not. Then we will be looking into Moana and the brand new teaser trailer that was released for the Olympics. Then afterwards, we will be looking into The Thief and the Cobbler coming to the Museum of Modern Arts. Then we will be looking into a behind-the-scenes look on Shin Godzilla. And finally, we will end things off with Matt's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. So, for our first story that we got today, technically, it's not really animation at first, but you'll see later that there is going to be a connection with the medium a bit later. Because one I am going to talk about is going to be regarding the 2016 reboot of Ghostbusters. Basically, if you guys don't know, and if you're on the internet, then you should probably know, that Ghostbusters is hands down one of the most controversial movies of the year, or maybe even the decade with how people have been reacting to this. Pretty much nothing really about the movie itself, but mostly with everyone around it, and not even of the movie, just the people who want to watch it or not. There is a huge controversy regarding that some people are saying that, they hate this new version because there's women in it, and then, like, the social justice warriors came in, and, the trailer was pretty much bad, and very few people even liked it, and then there was just, like, this one giant battle. But ultimately, in the end, when the movie was released, even though it had positive reviews from critics, it did, however, receive totally mixed reception from the audience. Like, this is one of the very few movies, or like one of the very rare movies that I've seen that it got, like, pretty much everybody gave it, like, a rating of all, like, just all the ratings. Like, people would give it a 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, you know? Something like that. However, how it's doing at the box office, it's pretty much the one that suffered the most out of all this. Because, it is a pretty expensive movie to make. It was, about, like, they say $144 million to make this film, and that's just on the movie itself. This is not even going into the heavy marketing. But overall, it seems that ultimately it's gonna be a flop. Now, box office predictions are saying that at the end, like, once the entire box office run, it's over, there could be a possibility that the movie will end up with either $200 million or, like, between $200 million and $250 million. But, with that said, though, like, that's not enough to make it a hit. Like, Sony would need at least, like, either $300 or $400 million to just break even with all the money that they spent on this. So, no matter what, it's going to be a flop. And according to an article on The Hollywood Reporter, it seems that it'll most likely be that Sony is going to lose a total of $70 million just for making this reboot of the Ghostbusters. Now, with that said, some of you might be wondering, why the fridge am I even talking about Ghostbusters? Like, this is not really animation. Sure, there's a lot of CG on this, and bad CG, may I mind you. But even with that, like, what is this? Like, why are we talking about this in an animation podcast? Well, this is where the future of the franchise comes in. Now, because that they could possibly lose $70 million, chances are there's not going to be a sequel. Like, this will not look like that Sony is going to be continuously making more movies with this Ghostbusters universe. So, a reboot of Ghostbusters 2 is not gonna happen. However, there is one division that might not actually let go of the Ghostbusters, that they still would want to make more Ghostbusters movies, and this is where Sony Pictures Animation comes in. Now, if you have heard in previous reports, there are some projects in which Sony Pictures Animation would want to do to turn Ghostbusters into either a movie or a TV show, or actually both in this case. Now, if I may go into my source here from The Hollywood Reporter, Sony won't comment on whether it has banished a sequel to the Netherworld, but perhaps tellingly, a rep says that the studio actively is pursuing an animated Ghostbusters feature that could hit theaters in 2019, and an animated TV series, Ghostbusters Ectoforce, which is eyeing an early 2018 vow. Both are being guided by Ivan Reitman, who firmly is back in charge at the Ghostbusters Empire via Ghost Corp, a subsidiary with a mandate to expand the branch across platforms. It was former Sony film chief Amy Pascal who first embraced Feig's version of the live-action reboot, not Reitman or Rothman. So basically with the whole thing that's going on is that even though the new Ghostbusters reboot, which is supposed to be the one to launch an entirely new Ghostbusters franchise, like even though that's going to be a flop and Sony is literally going to be losing millions of dollars on this, it looks like they might not give up on making more Ghostbusters projects altogether. It looks like, now, this is not official, it might not actually happen. We don't have an official word from Sony just yet, but it looks like they would want to continue making more Ghostbusters animated features, like animated projects, with the Ghostbusters animated spinoff and Ghostbusters Ectoforce TV series. Now, I'm sure some of you might be wondering, like, doesn't Sony Pictures Animation have anything better to do? Like, the thing is that it's very rare nowadays that Sony is making, any original content. Like, don't they have anything better? Like, think up of better ideas? Well, the answer to that is no, because apparently you can run a company without any sort of creativity or release any good product whatsoever. I'm not joking when I say that Sony Pictures Animation is the Donald Trump of the animation industry, because anybody with common sense would look at the company and just think, like, why are you still up and running? I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if one day Sony Animation is just gonna come up and say, hey, you know what's going to help us be on top of the animation industry? If any of you Second Amendment people do something about Disney. Alright, but anyways, all joking aside, now, going into this, now, if I just may have my little piece regarding the whole thing with the Ghostbusters reboot, I think overall, like, no, regardless of what you think about the movie, I think it's hands down, like, the worst example of marketing for a feature film, because it's more on that I blame for Ghostbusters' failure overall. Now, I just want to say, actually, beforehand, I just want to say this right now, that I'm not going to say anything regarding Ghostbusters itself. I have not seen the movie myself, so I can't really have my say, rather if the movie is good or if the movie is bad, so I'm just going to put that on the side because I can't really have my say on this. But, I will have my say regarding how this movie was a failure because I have seen everything that's been going on because, my God, what a disaster that it has been for the marketing. It really was. Now, the whole thing that began with all this was pretty much the trailer. And the trailer for the movie, it has gathered such a horrible reputation. I mean, nowadays, the first trailer for the Ghostbusters reboot is now regarded as the, like, not one of, but, like, the most disliked, the most hated trailer in YouTube history. I mean, people have been spamming and abusing that dislike button so much. It is ridiculous. And, even when I saw the trailer, it was pretty bad. It failed to even convince me to go and watch the movie. Like, not only are the special effects bad, but a lot of the jokes that they bring out was just terrible. It was less of a female Ghostbusters and more of a female Happy Madison movie. And again, this is not I'm not saying this about the movie itself. This is from what I've seen from the trailers that they've released. It was just really poorly made, and whoever was in charge of those trailers should seriously be fired. And with that said, but it's not just the trailer alone that really screwed it up for them. It was also the massive controversy that came with it. If anything, for me, that was my biggest turnoff that made me decide not to go watch Ghostbusters, because oh my god, the way that everybody reacted to this was just so stupid, and they made it such a big deal, and they were so entitled with what they want to say for this movie, a reboot of a freaking movie that Sony just made it just to make money out of it. Like, it was just so stupidly ridiculous. I mean, you got one side where you got, the total fanboys of Ghostbusters saying that, they're so personally attached to the original 1984 movie that, they're accusing things like, oh, this ruins my childhood. How dare this movie? They hold the original movie at such a high regard that they look at this reboot as such a total sin that it had violated the original Ghostbusters, and somehow it must pay. It must be sacrificed to the gods of Dan Aykroyd, Bill Murray, and Harold Ramis, and crap. Okay, this is terrible for me, but actually, screw it. I'm going to go check it up. I forgot the fourth one's name. Hold on a sec. I cannot let this go because, a lot of people are gonna give me crap for this. But anyways, who was it? Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Ernie Hudson, the gods of Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Ernie Hudson. Sorry, Ernie, that I forgot your name. But yeah, and then you got another side, which is pretty much the social justice warriors, who are equally as stupid as the fanboys, because pretty much they're trying to make this such a huge deal and trying to make it so bigger than what it is, and they're pretty much bullying every single person on the internet, saying that if you are not interested in watching Ghostbusters, then you're sexist. You're just hating this movie because there are women. The women are the stars of this movie, and you're not in support of this, so that makes you a sexist and a misogynist and whatever. And there are so many people who do that. I mean, if you look at the controversy after James Rolfe released his video explaining why he doesn't want to watch Ghostbusters, you should have seen so many idiots out there pretty much accusing James Rolfe for being a sexist and a misogynist and portraying him as such a horrible person just because he just stated that he doesn't want to watch Ghostbusters. It was so ridiculous. So all you got is just a giant pile of idiots fighting against each other. And what does Sony Pictures do about it? They just add fuel to the fire. They look at this as a good thing. And I think that was the ultimate downfall of Ghostbusters, is that Sony somehow has this mentality of there's no such thing as bad publicity. So what they did is that they're just adding fuel to the fire, and they really try to emphasize that if you don't watch Ghostbusters, then you're a sexist. And basically throughout the whole thing, they're pretty much mocking and insulting the fans who should be the prime target audience for this movie. So instead of bringing them in to watch this film, they're just mocking them. They're just insulting them. And somehow they were such on their high horse thinking that this is going to be the biggest movie of the year. if you look at the mentality of, like, the heads like Amy Pascal and Tom Rothman and all the big heads at Sony, they were thinking that this was going to be the, like, this was going to be in the levels of, like, Captain America Civil War, Finding Dory, Zootopia, and all those films. Like, they were thinking this is going to be so huge, considering that everybody's been talking about it. But is that what happened? No. It pretty much fell in their face. Like, because of all this controversy, the controversy that's been going on, and most of it, like, being bad word of mouth, despite that it did get some decently good reviews. I'm not going to say massive praise, but just decently good. Like, most of the critics would say that it's okay. But the thing is that, like, they handled it so poorly. And it, like, it, at the end of the day, it just ended up costing them. And at this rate, it could just cost them, like, rather it be $70 million or $100 million and stuff like that. Like, they got to pay big time. So with that said, that's pretty much my entire piece on how is it that Ghostbusters was such a massive failure. But now let's go and focus on to the animated projects that they have, like what they want to do with the animated works, such as the animated Ghostbusters spinoff film and Ghostbusters Ectoforce. And honestly, yeah, I am very perplexed about this. I'm honestly really confused. Again, I have not seen Ghostbusters. I can't really have my say about it, but honestly, continuing the franchise at this point just doesn't really make sense to me. Because here's the thing, like, making more Ghostbusters movie at this point would be like, or like, not like, just more Ghostbusters projects would be as if Disney decided to make animated spin-off films and TV shows based on something like John Carter and Tomorrowland. Now, I think everybody can agree they're not really the worst movies out there, but, like, there's no denying the facts that both of them were massive financial flops. So it wouldn't really make sense for Disney to actually go and make more of those. They know that they can't really make money. So the fact that Sony is continuing to pursue making more Ghostbusters projects, it doesn't really make sense to me. I don't know why they would want to continue flourishing this franchise that it's already been proven to them that it's not a franchise. Like, it can't be turned into a franchise. They failed to turn this into a franchise. Now, however, I will say, though, that there is one thing I'll hand it to them. Like, I'll give Sony this point that technically, there are, like, it's not just the movies that, you know, like, they don't make, like, technically when it comes to a movie, it's not just the movie itself that they can find profit. There are different venues. And let me just take a little bit of an excerpt again from The Hollywood Reporter. Sony disputes the amount of their potential loss, insisting that the revenue streams from merchandising and such attractions as a new Ghostbusters exhibit at Madame Tussauds and a theme park ride in Dubai will help defray and defrict. The studio also notes that the number of people renting the 1984 film has soared over the summer. The loss calculation is way off, says the Sony rep, with multiple revenue streams, including consumer products, gaming, location-based entertainment, continued international rollout, and huge third-party promotional partnership that migrated costs. The bottom line, even before co-financing, is not remotely close to that number. Now, I will agree that technically, I will agree with Sony that technically, with Ghostbusters in general, like, it's still marketable. It's still profitable. They could still find a way to make a quick buck out of it. However, here's where the line is crossed. Here's, like, the big difference with how they can make their money. Now, they can't... Now, the thing is, with the big financial loss that they have with Ghostbusters regarding, like the new Ghostbusters that was released, now, they can't really make a profit out of that. The thing is that, like, they can make money out of it, but only if it has to do with the 1984 movie. They can't, like, the thing is, they can't profit from it as a franchise. They can only profit from it as a movie. Like, sure, you could definitely sell, like, toys and action figures and all that kind of stuff about Ghostbusters, but only if it has the original team. Like, if it has Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, and Ernie Hudson, you know? If it has those main four. If it has to do with, like, the new Ghostbusters or anything like that, people don't want it. You know, like, people are not really into that. They just want it as a movie. They don't want it as a big franchise. And I think that's the big flaw with the with what Sony Pictures Animation is trying to do with their animated projects, is that this is the new Ghostbusters, which is what people don't want. What they want is the original 1984 Ghostbusters. They don't want any new wackadoodle things with Ghostbusters. They don't want, like, an animated Ghostbusters. They don't want a TV series of Ghostbusters. They just want their original Ghostbusters with their original team. Whatever came out of the 80s for Ghostbusters is profitable. Nothing that came out of the new age. Now, regarding if Sony should let go of those projects or not, honestly, I don't know. Like, the thing is that I'm not gonna be closed-minded and say, no, they need to shut them out no matter what. I'm not saying that at all. Maybe they could have some good ideas with what they can do with the Ghostbusters TV show and animated movie. Maybe they do. But the thing is that at this point, what should be wise to do is that, considering that they want to make this a huge, they want to make Ghostbusters this new huge franchise, they need to let go of everything that has to do with the reboot. Because that's kind of the original intention with all these projects, like Ecto-Force and the animated movie, is that, like, they want to go and make this Ghostbusters cinematic universe with this thing, but clearly that's not going to work out. So if they can take out all the elements, like, if they could take out anything that has to do with the 2016 Ghostbusters, then, like, maybe they'll find a way to reboot it in a way. Like, I guess that's the way to put it, is that they should, like, if they want to profit, if they want to continue with the Ghostbusters franchise, they need to find a way to reboot it. Now, keep in mind, since we are talking about Sony Pictures Animation, this is not the first time that they're doing it. Next year, they're actually going to reboot the Smurfs with Smurfs The Lost Village. Now, rather if it's going to work or not, that we will have to wait and see. Rather if that's even going to be a good or bad movie, that we will have to wait and see. But with Ecto-Force and the animated movie, it's better off at this point if they would reboot it, because if they're going to put in elements regarding the 2016 Ghostbusters, it'll only bring bad, like, it's only going to bring bad into, like, those projects, because bringing back the 2016 Ghostbusters, like, even after a few years, it'll only remind audiences regarding the controversies that occurred with it, all the, like, pretty much all the social media battles that happened, all the fights that occurred, like, just for this one movie, and especially a reminder that the movie was a flop. So if they're going to bring in elements of the 2016 Ghostbusters reboot, they're just going to all it's going to do is going to remind audiences how Sony lost money, and they're just going to remind them the fact that Sony is just profiting on something that lost a lot of money, which makes absolutely no sense. And I mean, I guess for now, we'll have to wait and see with what Sony is going to do with this entire entire Ghostbusters thing, if they're going to keep it as a franchise, if they're not, or whatever. Actually, it just reminded me of something. Technically, it's not just the Smurfs that they're also rebooting it. Technically, they're doing the same thing with Spider-Man, considering how much of a failure the Amazing Spider-Man movies are. That, like, they're pretty much gonna go and do it again with Spider-Man Homecoming and the animated Spider-Man movie. So, again, this is not the first time that Sony is doing it. And I guess right now they're just having a mentality of, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. But at this rate, like, Considering that it is a flop, like, I'm honestly on the fence, rather if it's a good idea or not. Like, either way, like, if they can actually, like, even though it is Sony and, like, chances are they might not, but if they can find a good idea to re-reboot the franchise of Ghostbusters, I'll be open for it. But if not, then you might as well shut them down. In fact, you might as well shut Ghost Corps entirely. Just, like, forget about, like, any future projects about Ghostbusters and just, like, focus your marketing on just the original 1984 film. And I guess, like, overall, I'm just gonna put, like, end this story off here. And I would like to ask you guys, you know, like, I want to know a bit about your thoughts regarding, like, this whole ghost, but, like, the pretty much, what are your thoughts regarding the fate of the Ghostbusters reboot? Should it be a good idea for Sony at this rate now to continue making Ghostbusters a franchise? Now, before you answer that, I just want to mention that I don't want to hear any answers like no because the new movie sucks or yes because the new movie is great. I don't want to hear that. My question is not about your thoughts on the Ghostbusters reboot. I don't care about that. What I am asking is it a good idea for Sony to continue trying to profit on a franchise in which the movie that should start, like pretty much the franchise launcher, ended up making them lose money, specifically $70 million worth. So, is it a good idea for Sony to do that? I don't know. Leave your thoughts in the comments, and we'll see. Rather, if Sony is going to continue or stop, but either way, sacrifices have to be made, and those sacrifices have to be millions and millions of dollars. Okay, so for our next story, let's take a break from Sony, and now let's move on to Disney with Moana. Now, if you guys don't know, this week, the biggest thing that pretty much happened is that the Olympics have begun in Rio, so now pretty much all that is going on, and if you're someone like me, you just don't necessarily give a crap because it's just athletes doing athlete things. But with that said, Disney decided to do something a little bit special for the Olympics, and that they have actually released a new teaser trailer for Moana. Now, this is not an official trailer. This is just another teaser trailer, considering that it's just a minute long. And luckily, if you have missed it on TV, then they have posted on their YouTube page at Walt Disney Animation Studios. And I decided, you know what, for the sake of this podcast, I'm going, let me go and check out this Moana trailer to see what's going on. And, oh my god, I just gotta say that compared to the last one, this is much better. Or at least, like, compared to the first one that was released. This trailer, oh my god. Now, if anything, like, what happened to this teaser trailer? This should be the one that should launch everything. Because, holy crap, this actually, it does reveal a lot more about the movie itself. But, oh my god, now this actually makes me more excited about Moana than the first teaser trailer. We actually do see more a bit of the characters themselves, where we see more especially the characteristics of Moana. That's probably the biggest thing that this trailer revealed, is regarding the personality of Moana, where she's pretty much we could tell a bit that she has a bit of this smart aleck attitude with Maui. She's a little bit like Anna in Frozen, in a sense. So, I could tell that she could possibly be a likable character. And then you also have Maui, which in this one, I feel like he's more prominently shown as a comic relief more so than in the first teaser trailer. Because if you remember, in the first teaser trailer, he did this traditional dance, which if you don't know the context of the culture of where this dance came from, like, it'll just make Maui look goofy and weird. But in this one, Like, you could tell that he still retains his egotistical side to him that it was revealed in the first trailer, but in this one, like, we could see more of that egotistical sense used a bit more as a comic relief, and it actually is pretty effective. Not to mention a great performance coming from Dwayne Johnson, and on top of that, like, you know, he could probably be another, like, you know, who knows? Maybe he'll be another great example of an animated egotistical character, something like Daffy Duck in the Looney Tunes or Kuzco in The Emperor's New Groove. Like, he could be in the same veins of that, but also Maui has superpowers, so there's also that factor going for him. But on top of that, we also do see a lot of other great moments as well. Like, there was just one moment that we actually see, like, this lava character, and it could be one of the antagonists of the movie. We also get, like, little tidbits on their adventure, a little bit of the, and mostly we do see the relationship between Moana and Maui. Like, this is, like, honestly, like I said before, this is the teaser trailer that we've all been waiting for. This is the teaser trailer we should have gotten for a while. This is the kind that is making me excited to go see Moana. This is the one that gives me faith that this could be one of the best animated features of the year next to Zootopia. Like, honestly, this is what makes me excited for the Disney Polynesian animated feature. This is definitely great. I am, like, if you guys haven't seen the trailer for this, definitely do so. Like, it'll definitely make you excited for Moana, and, like, you'll actually learn a lot more about the characters like Maui and Moana, plus a little bit of a tidbit of, you know, like, you're gonna get a tidbit of other elements of what's gonna be going on with the movie, so I definitely am excited for that. Now, for our next story that we got right here, this is something that I am also excited about. But at the same time, I'm just a bit sad that, oh man, I can't even go and check it out. Like, it really sucks. But anyways, this is something that's still really cool, and maybe you guys can actually get an opportunity to check this out. And what I am talking about is going to be regarding The Thief and the Cobbler. Now, if you are a fan of animation, then chances are you have heard of the story about Richard Williams, The Thief and the Cobbler. In fact, it's one of the most infamous stories, or like the infamous production stories in the history of animation. And this is one of those things that really, like, it's one of the defining examples of my philosophy in movies, that sometimes the making of the movie can tell a much more fascinating story than the movie itself. The thing is with The Thief and the Cobbler is that it started out in 1964 by Richard Williams, and his mission was pretty much to go and make his masterpiece. And while at the same time, he's just trying to go and improve his craft to be, like, one of the big, like, trying to be a master animator, which he ultimately is. Like, Richard Williams nowadays is one of the very few people in this world that is considered a master animator. Like, not everybody can hold that title. But after, like, almost 30 years later, things didn't really work out. And, like, the process just ended up becoming really, really slow because he has a specific vision for it. He, like, Richard Williams is really demanding. And what ultimately ended up happening is that after Warner Brothers came in to finance the movie, or the Bonds Company specifically, came in to finance The Thief and the Cobbler because of Richard Williams' work for Who Framed Roger Rabbit, they decided to pretty much kick him out and pretty much replace him with a new team of animators to pretty much finally finish off The Thief and the Cobbler, which we ended up with the Miramax version or Arabian Night or whatever, which ended up pretty much sucking, and a lot of people just pass it off as a ripoff of Disney's Aladdin. Now, in recent years, however, The Thief and the Cobbler is showing a bit of light once again, considering that the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences are pretty much doing small screenings for Richard Williams, like the official unfinished director's cut called Richard Williams, The Thief and the Cobbler, A Moment in Time. Now, there was at one point in California that they did do a screening for it, But now it looks like recently it's going to have its East Coast premiere. Now, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and the Museum of Modern Art are pretty much going to go and have a special screening for The Thief and the Cobbler. Now, if I may go to the official MoMA website, what they described here is, Richard Williams' The Thief and the Cobbler is a legend in animation circles, both as a breathtakingly beautiful work of hand-drawn animation, which I will say that is absolutely true. The Thief and the Cobbler actually has some of the greatest hand-drawn animation you will ever find. A conscious attempt to better Walt Disney at his own game, and for its troubled production history. An Arabian Night fantasy about a mischievous thief and a resourceful shoemaker who saves a golden city from the clutches of a wicked vizier. The film entered production in 1964. As the scope widened and financiers came and went, production only reached an endpoint in 1992 when Williams lost control of the film and other... fudge nabbit, my stomach is not cooperating with me! Williams lost control of the film, and other animators were brought in to finish what was eventually released in the US in a much altered version as Arabian Night. Luckily, Williams was able to make a copy of his work print as it existed on May 13th, 1992, the last day of production, and the moment in time of the title. This print has been preserved and restored by the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences Academy Film Archive. MoMA and the Academy are proud to be able to present this film's New York premiere. Mr. Williams, a three-time Oscar winner, will be present for a discussion hosted by animation historian John Kaymaker on September 24th. The program will include a selection of clips from Mr. Williams' work, including his brilliant animation from Who Framed Roger Rabbit, as well as his personally hand-drawn 2015 short film, the Oscar-nominated Prologue. So, as you could tell, now, September 24th is the big one that you need to mark down on your calendar, but if you just want to go and check out the movie of The Thief and the Cobbler, A Moment in Time, they are still showing it between September 22nd and September 27th. So at least you'll still have a 5-day gap. But yeah, it's mostly the, it is mostly September 24th at 4 p.m. that you really need to mark down your calendar to go and actually check out. You need to start out going September 24th at 1:30 p.m. to start out with the movie, and then at 4, it's going to be the interview of John Kaymaker with Richard Williams. So this is actually a great opportunity. If you are an animation fan who lives in the New York area, then this is a must thing that you have to do. Considering that The Thief of the Cobbler is such a fascinating story, just by the production alone. And, a lot of animation fans are still pursuing to actually, they would love to see the fine, pretty much what is Richard Williams' original vision. And it's like the idea of that is starting to become more and more popular. Even animators and filmmakers themselves are highly interested to go to actually see an actual director's cut of The Thief and the Cobbler, a completed form in its, in its entirety, the original vision that Richard Williams always wanted for 50 years. They want to see that actually happen. They want to see that actually come to life. And I've seen, change.org had a few petitions to actually make that happen, to actually complete The Thief and the Cobbler as it was originally intended. But even though, we still have this unfinished print going on, and technically for the public, the closest thing that we've got so far is actually... what was it? It was The Thief and the Cobbler Recobbled Cut, which is an unofficial, director's cut made by a Richard Williams fan, Garrett Gilchrist. And with that one, it is definitely great what Garrett actually did with that one, but having the official director's cut would be absolutely phenomenal. And I would love to see one day to actually be released in the public. In fact, this is one, like, this is one of the very, like, this should be an animated film that should be released under, like, this should be released from, what was it? From the Criterion Collection. I would love to see, like, A Moment in Time actually be released as part of the Criterion Collection so we can actually see what is going on. Like, maybe it could also include, like, plenty of other stuff as well, like interviews with, interviews with other filmmakers, with Richard Williams. Maybe even add in the entire documentary of Persistence of Vision as well. Like, if you guys want to know a lot more info regarding the history of what happened with the making of The Thief and the Cobbler, I highly encourage you guys to go and check out The Persistence of Vision. It's definitely a fascinating and maybe a bit of a depressing documentary as well, considering that it does not want to have a happy ending for this one. But yeah, this is definitely a great opportunity, especially with the interview with Richard Williams. I highly encourage you guys. Maybe I wouldn't really have a chance to go and check this one out, but if you guys live inside the New York area, then I highly encourage you guys go to MoMA and check this out. Once again, the dates for it is going to be between September 22nd and September 27th, but the big one is going to be September 24th, when Richard Williams will also be there. Okay, now for our next story, we are going a bit with another live-action movie, technically, but we are going to be focusing on the animation work that's going on with it. And I am, of course, talking about Shin Godzilla, which is pretty much Toho's big comeback with Godzilla. Now, originally, the franchise with Godzilla was supposed to be over in Japan, considering that they did this huge grand finale along 12 years ago. But now, Toho decided that they're going to reboot it with an all-new Godzilla called Shin Godzilla. And with this one, like, they pretty much got, they're going to incorporate brand new technology. This is no longer, they're no longer going to be using, like, rubber suits and all that kind of stuff. This is new technology, and they're going to make it really, really big. In fact, this is actually going to be directed by Evangeline director Hideaki Anno, and the director of the live-action Attack on Titan film, Shinji Higuchi, to be working on the film. But what they actually recently did is that they revealed a behind-the-scenes look into the computer animation, the CG that is going on with the Godzilla film. So not just Godzilla itself, but also, like, everything around it, like when the buildings are going to be crashing down, the catastrophe that's going on with the people, all the airplanes, the explosions, and all that kind of stuff. And it really is fascinating. But the big one, like, the big show presenter, is pretty much what they're doing with Godzilla. And trust me, in this video alone, you actually see a lot more of Godzilla, more so than you do than the 2014 Legendary Pictures film. And it is absolutely fascinating the amount of detail that they actually put in to this new Godzilla. And let me just put this on right now and just see this beauty of Godzilla. And my God, yeah, like, they, like, in a way, like, if you look at the new Godzilla that they did with Shin Godzilla, in a way, he kind of looks, like, I guess, burnt and zombified, but yeah, like, you could tell, the whole design of Godzilla, like, it's really detailed, like, they made it so much, like, they put in, like, so much wrinkled, it looks like he came out of the lava. This pretty much states that Godzilla is back, and it's such a great design, and it actually really does look fascinating when it moves around. Like you could see the slow movements that they actually put in, and if anything, it's more the tail that actually moves around, and it's actually really, really nice. And then, like, there are some segments as well that they actually show you, like, there's this scene going on, and then afterwards, like, people would, like, what they would do in post-production is that they would just put in all the different layers that come with, trying to create all this devastation and destruction with Godzilla. And, you know, like, the shots that they made with it, it actually looks really fascinating. It looks really awesome. I'm watching it right now through, what was it, Anime News Network, and it actually looks definitely fascinating. And, like, they, you know, it actually is pretty effective to make Godzilla look real. Even, like, when it's, like, handheld camera, you could definitely see that it's Godzilla. It's definitely... it's definitely really great. And honestly, like, I do encourage you guys to go and check out the video itself is I can't read Japanese, but either way, like, you definitely have to check out the behind the scenes video of Shin Godzilla. It is definitely really cool what they've done, and what they've done is definitely fascinating what they did with it. Like, you see all the different things that they try to do with Godzilla, and, like, oh my god, I'm checking this right now. There's a scene in particular where all these helicopters are just shooting Godzilla and trying to put all these little explosions around him, but it's not really that effective, and it really is cool. Like, if anything, this actually would want me to, like, this is actually making me very interested to go and check out Shin Godzilla, and it's really cool, and it really is admirable with what they're trying to do with Godzilla. Now, technically, I know that by saying some of the stuff that I've said, some of you might be a little bit saddened that it's no longer the traditional way that they're making the Godzilla movies, and that pretty much they've replaced Godzilla with another CGI monster, like what they did with the American movies. But fear not, it's not like the art of it is not entirely gone. It's not really that they took away the rubber costume. They just put in a, I guess the best way to put it is that they put in a digital costume, because technically it mentioned that Godzilla is actually going to be played by Manzai Nomura, who is a stage actor, and he's actually going to be playing Shin Godzilla through motion capture. So at least the feel of Godzilla moving around is still going to be like how it is with the rubber suit. It's just that now it's going to be a lot more comfortable for the actor. So at the very least, there is one group of people that's actually really happy with this new change. But yeah, I highly implore you guys to go and check out not just the new teaser trailer for Moana, but also the behind the scenes look on Shin Godzilla. And the movie will... the movie is actually out right now in Japan. And it actually is going to be released soon elsewhere in the world, including North America, Central America, South America, and the Caribbean, in late 2016, distributed by Funimation. And so finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week here. Now, for Matt's Pick of the Week, I decided to go into something that, personally, this is something that I've went into, not directly, but, you know, like, it felt a lot like some familiar territory here. And, like, in a way, this is going to be a little bit of a warning for artists, more so than it is a, you know, this is not really news per se, but this is just a warning for any artists out there. And this is going to be regarding the CTN Expo. Now, for those of you who don't know, the CTN Expo, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's a convention per se. It's not like a big geek convention that's in the same veins of something like all the Comic Cons or MagFest or Con Bravo or any of that stuff. It's not really like that. CTN Expo is more like a job fair in a way, but it specializes in animation. But also, the original purpose of it is supposed to encourage community. It's supposed to bring in all these artists together to, you know, to be in harmony and to help each other out, you know, to get jobs and to work on different platforms and, you know, to work in places, rather they be a small studio or something as big as like Disney. However, recently, there have been a lot of negative publicity regarding this, and the big one that recently came out is a video released by Stefan Silver. Now, if you guys don't know who Stefan Silver is actually a character designer, which you may know more of his works from Kim Possible, Danny Phantom, and also Clerks the Animated Series. And every week on Monday on his YouTube channel, Stefan Silver, he actually has a podcast called, not really a podcast. He would release weekly videos called Art Talk, where Stefan Silver would just talk to you guys regarding animation, where, or like, mostly the, like, pretty much the business of an artist, per se. I'm not just gonna categorize animation, like, just animators and stuff like that, but mostly, like, in the field that would require as much artist as animation, per se. Now, in this video, Stefan Silver has, he brought out a new video called Art Talk 85, Stefan Silver, Why I Can't Support CTN Expo Anymore. And what he was talking about in this is regarding that, pretty much his personal reasons why he can't go out and, he's no longer attending CTN Expo. He's pretty much against the, convention nowadays. And a lot of people have been asking why. And his personal reason is regarding one of the founders, or the founder of CTN Expo, Tina Price. Now, her original intention with CTN Expo was good, you know, is to bring in the animation community together and to help each other out. But lately, it's becoming a lot less of that. And in the mindset of Tina, she's pretty much turning this as a get-rich-quick scheme to turn it into more of a business, per se. And lately, she has been screwing over many different artists, including Stefan Silver. And in the video in particular, is that Stefan is just mentioning his personal experience and, like, his personal experience with what he had to go through to support CTN Expo, and it pretty much left him completely unrewarded. And basically, at the end of the day, CTN Expo is just screwing him over, along with many other artists. Now, the thing is, the reason why I picked this for Matt's Pick of the Week is that this actually really did hit close to home. Not for me personally with CTN Expo. I have never been in CTN Expo. I mean, fudge nabbit, as I'm recording this, I have yet to go to California just yet, which I really, really, really want to. But what I want to mention with this is that, the thing is that this hits close to home for me because I've went through a very similar experience with another company, which is pretty much in the exact same veins. And gather around, children, because Uncle Animat is going to tell you a bit of a story. And I remember once upon a time, a few years ago, I was with a company called Project Million Entertainment. Now, the original intention with Project Million Entertainment is a little bit something like websites like, something like RTV or That Guy with Glasses or something like that, you know, somewhere around those veins. But with this one, they want to make original content that would be exclusive for PME. So the thing is that PME wants to expand, and they open up a brand new website, and they've actually gathered a lot of, a lot of well-known reviewers, if you watch a lot of reviewers, there are some familiar, I do apologize if in this podcast I contain a lot of gas, but as I was saying, in PME, they've actually gathered a lot of well-known reviewers. Some of these include, like, D'Amanda Hagen, The Omega Geek, The Blockbusters Chick, Spazmaster, Mikey Insanity, and especially, I think one of the top billed people there was Jew Wario, Justin Carmichael. And while all that was happening, I decided to join in, and I got accepted in. And one of the jobs that I had to do was I had to be the cameraman while the man in charge, Robert Demers, he was pretty much he had to be the host of this show called Con Man, where he goes around conventions and interviewing people. And we decided to go and do Fantasia Film Festival. And I gotta say, it was hands down one of the best summers that I've went to. It definitely was an amazing experience. I talked with a lot of different filmmakers. In fact, there was one that the name actually kind of escapes me. But like, I met a lot of very fascinating people in the in the movie industry. Some of these include, hold on a sec, there's just one name that, okay, yeah, all right, now I know. It's just I met a lot with a lot of fascinating people there. I actually met Lloyd Kaufman of the head of Troma Films. I've also met up with Kane Hodder, who is known as the most prominent actor to play Jason Voorhees. I met up with Don Mancini, the creator of the creator of the Chucky series. And also, at the end, the last two people that we interviewed was actually Nick Frost and Edgar Wright, because they were there for, they were there for the North American premiere of The World's End. And I was honored to be one of the first people ever to actually see the World's End, which was definitely a fantastic movie and a great addition to the Cornetto trilogy. But then afterwards, like, I did so many other things. Like, that wasn't the only thing that I did for Rob, though. I also worked on many other projects as well. I did a mini-series for him. I did another convention. I was a cameraman once again for him at the Montreal Comic Con. I had to edit some episodes of Con Men. I had to also be an editor for some of the episodes. And I had to do all that. But at the end of the day, what ended up happening is that a lot of people decided to rebel against him. And pretty much what happened is that PME just fell apart. Because the biggest problem was that Rob was supposed to pay people. He promised a lot of reviewers out there for a lot of money, and he promised to pay them like hundreds of dollars and stuff like that. And even though I did get paid at the Fantasia Film Festival, I did not get there was one moment that clicked on my head that didn't, like, I realized I didn't get, like, I didn't get paid, actually. I didn't, he still owes me a lot of money. In fact, last time I checked with all the expenses and all the work that I had to do for him, like, for the things that he didn't pay me, he owes me between, like, $1,500 and $2,000. And lately, the thing is that he owes a lot of people that, like, for each reviewer out there, he owes people like $1,000 and $2,000 and stuff like that. And there is one that he owes like $5,000 towards. And what really did fell apart was the very tragic moment when Justin Carmichael unfortunately committed suicide. And he actually, and his dad, not Justin Carmichael's dad, but Robert Demers's dad, actually uses that to his, he wanted to use that to his advantage and try to write this fake letter saying that Justin Carmichael is in full support, which if anybody who was close to Justin, they would say that it was a total lie. So it was such a disrespect for his death. And after all that, we've never heard, nobody has ever heard from Robert Demers again. He kind of disappeared from the face of the earth. And, at the end of the day, he just owes a lot of people thousands and upon thousands of dollars. And, even still me, I'm still waiting for that $2,000 to appear. So, what I'm trying to say with this is that I do understand what Stefan Silver is going through. Like, he was promised a lot of money to go and support CTN Expo, but at the end of the day, he just ends up being screwed over. Tina Price just promised Stefan Silver, so many things to help make CTN Expo grow and stuff like that, but at the end, nothing happened. He just ended up being shafted, and whenever Stefan Silver tries to organize something, Tina Fey takes it as a personal attack, takes it as a personal insult. And I mean, with Stefan Silver, that's just one of the millions of stories of, one of the millions of horror stories that you would hear coming out of CTN Expo, because nowadays, what's going on with it is that art, like there are hundreds of artists that are coming out explaining how, like, nowadays when they try to register for CTM Expo, like they're crammed up on these little booths just way too close from one another, and like giving them absolutely no publicity while giving more priority to giant companies like Disney and Sony Pictures Animation, like to give them more priority over the small animators who's trying to just make ends meet. So it feel like the whole purpose of CTN Expo, it's becoming less and less about the community and more about the business and for Tina Price to just make money over it. So I guess overall with it is that, like, over, like, you know, I can't tell you what to do and what you can't do. I mean, if you're, like, if you're an artist and, you know, I will, you know, it would actually make me happy to know if there are any artists actually listening to the Animation Podcast. But I'm just saying, for any artists out there, if you want to go to CTN Expo, I can't really do anything. I can't really stop you. But the thing is, I can only heed you a little warning. I mean, with all the stories that you keep hearing about CTN Expo, what makes you think if you're going to go in there and you feel and what makes you think you're going to go in there and you feel like you're going to have you're going to go and find an opportunity when the expo itself gives little respect to the artists, you know, the people who the convention is made specifically for? I mean, basically, you're just going to be, like, if you're going to enter into it, you're just going to be as much screwed over as the people who try to register a booth in there and stuff like that. So, honestly, it's probably best to, honestly, my recommendation is that, yeah, like, at this point, like, you could pretty much give up on CTN Expo. And, I mean, there are plenty of other places that you can pretty much do the same thing. I mean, in different countries, they're pretty much doing the same thing, but they're organized a lot better. Like, in Mexico, there is Pixel Alt. In the U.S., there are several others. But I think in the video that Stefan Silver put up, he did mention about Designer Expo, I believe it is. But I'm sure that there are plenty of others. And in Canada, I guess, like, what would count is the Ottawa Animation Film Festival, maybe? I guess that counts as one, because considering that there are some big companies like Disney that would come in and they would sponsor in and stuff like that. So, and also, like, they would have their little job fair. So maybe there's that as well. But yeah, with CTN Expo, it used to be big, but nowadays, like, it might not be worth it anymore because of the lack of respect for the artists, the people who the expo is originally intended for. So with that said, yeah, like, I guess you got a big homework to do. I also recommend you guys to go and check out this, to check out Stefan Silver's video and along with the others on top of that, but also check out, like, many of the other horror stories that you would hear regarding CTN Expo. And you could judge for yourself if the entire expo really is worth it or not. But anyways, that is all that I've got for next week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work on film-book.com. Just search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at Animat505. If you listen to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, do you mind doing us a little favor and rate and review this episode? That would be wonderful. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that like button on our video and leave us a little thought on your comments and leave us a comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes.